interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Fripp Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan Baker. Welcome to the Crypt.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. The one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Now is the time for Counterspeech with Dina Sachs. Dina will guide us through the convoluted corridors of the American legal system, and she will explain how the people can reclaim their country and restore true democracy.
This is Dina Sachs, and you're listening to Counter Speech on Revolution Radio. I've got Renette Cinnamon with me again today. Thank you, Renette, so much for joining me.
You're welcome.
And as some of you might know already, Renette and I are working on initiating a lawsuit to halt the geoengineering, the spraying of our skies. We've been looking into this week, and we have some things to share about that. And Renette, a quick reminder for those who may not have seen the last show, how long has this been going on and why are they saying they're doing it?
Well, it's been going on for actually generations, and it's most notable with Ho Chi Minh Trail during the Vietnam War. We were actually spraying their supply lines, creating a weather modification programs and expanding the monsoon season and just really just raining out the supply lines. And so this happened during the Vietnam War. And then after that, there were definitely some global agreements to stop weather modification during a time of war. And now, of course, there's many different type of programs going on. Some is for research, universities. Some is for the power companies. Other ones are for actually the military itself. Of course, now we have Bill Gates saying he wants to do solar dimming. But these programs have been going on for a long time. And they have the public side, which is this is why we're doing it. But there's other reasons why they're also doing it. We know there's things like connecting us to the Internet of Things for surveillance, for better satellite imagery. And of course, we are getting results from rainwater, and we're seeing a lot of very dangerous and toxic heavy metals as well, which is bad for all of human life. In fact, just all life altogether.
Right. Well, I saw in the open letter to the International Criminal Court alleging United Nations complicity in planetary treason, written by, it looks like, three scholars. This is an abstract that you sent me. It's Advances in Social Science Research Journals, Volume 9, Number 10, 2022. So some researchers are actually accusing the United Nations of planetary treason. And when I was also reading through some of this, this has been going on, well, at least since the 70s. But remember, I told you the other day, I got online and got a video of Lyndon B. Johnson. I think it was before JFK was shot. I think he was still the vice president at this time. And he was given some kind of a commencement speech or something. And he said, "He who controls the weather will control the world." And so this is back in like 61 or maybe 62. So this is something we've known about for a long time. And in The Dimming, and I know you sent me a link to The Dimming and I watched The Dimming, you know, it shows a guy standing in the middle of a field and aiming this big contraption to the sky. And I guess just spewing out a bunch of, I'm not sure what it is, some kind of misty looking thing. And then literally a few minutes later, it started raining. He goes, "Here it comes back down." So he made it rain basically on film to show us what was possible. And, you know, my concern really goes right back to Lyndon B. Johnson's statement about controlling the world, because when I look at what's going on right now, so much is happening so fast. And it seems to me that whatever their reasons are, I don't believe them. I don't trust anything our government does. At this point, there's just been too many cases or situations recently where the government's lied to us. The government has lied about the safety of the COVID vaccines. They can say they didn't know, and they can say Pfizer misled them, but I don't believe it, because the way the FDA, for example, walked in and walked out and approved Comirnaty, the other Pfizer vaccine. It, you know, that's a joke. You walk in, no hearings, no experts, no deliberation, really, just a walk in, walk out, vote to give FDA approval to an experimental vaccine. And of course, that's the one that was never available to anyone anyway. And they turned around and gave our military soldiers BioNTech, which is the German, the other Pfizer, the German designed. I'm not sure where Comirnaty was designed, but you know, the soldiers saw it. They saw the vials and the officer said, "Well, we're not getting Comirnaty, the FDA approved one." And of course, you have the military law forever has said soldiers cannot be subjected to non-FDA approved vaccines. So that's why they walked in and walked out and just, you know, approved this thing. So there's a lot going on. What is your best guess? I know we really don't know for sure. What is your, because I have a theory as to why they're really doing this. At this time, what is your theory as to why they really are spraying these chemtrails, blocking the sun, altering the weather patterns? And I did see in The Dimming, I think it was The Dimming, where the prime minister, I think it was of Israel, there was so much going on in that documentary, but I think he was understood up and said, "I haven't had rain for a year because of you," right? And so he's basically blaming these geoengineers in the various countries for his country not getting rain. So that tipped me off, like, well, that's interesting. What do you think the real reason is for doing this?
Well, you know, and also we don't refer to them as chemtrails. We always say geoengineering, aerosol spraying, and so on.
But the military called them chemtrails.
I know, but
it's like calling the unvaccinated, you know, vectors of disease. I mean, at some point we have to laugh at them and say, they're chemical trails coming out behind planes. The military called them chemtrails in their documents. So
I know, I get it. Geoengineering is just one piece of the whole entire pie. You also have 5G, which is a millimeter wave. You also have the Internet of Things. You have the transhuman agenda. You also have a depopulation agenda, the ability to completely control humanity. So geoengineering is simply an application for a much larger plan. And what's happened over the last 3 years is that we have been so COVID-centric, we have not been paying attention to what's been over our heads. And again, this has been going on for decades, but really in the last few years, people become much more aware of it because it is so ubiquitous. Day in, day out, throughout our lives, you just see it all the time. And people are now becoming astutely aware of really extreme weather, extraordinary storms they've never seen before. incredible ice storms and snow that's extraordinarily heavy, and extraordinary rains and floods, and then dry periods. It's just this extreme one way or the other. So
huge balls of hail coming down, like little baseballs coming down, just crazy stuff.
So the reason why I reached out to you originally, Dina, was because your expertise is not in geoengineering, though we're going to have workshops for you, and we're bringing experts in to kind of get you up to speed. And as you already know, because you've said, once you start to dive into this, you realize how deep the wormhole goes. It's overwhelming when you realize there's this hidden agenda, and it's gigantic. And so our objective is to get you up to snuff on understanding the whole entire dynamic, and it is gigantic. And then also applying the constitutional law.
Right. That's right. Recommended play. Right. And that's always the case. We always have experts in, you know, any case that involves anything to do with, you know, engineering or design or certainly medical cases. So that's typical. The experts educate the lawyer as to the facts and what we know and what we don't know about causation, about injuries and whatnot. Then the lawyers go out and they investigate what legal theories may be brought. And one of the things we've already discovered is the public trust doctrine. The public trust doctrine is just a basic theory that the government must preserve our air and our water for our use because we need it to live. And, you know, we talked a lot about that case called Giuliani, which came down in 2020, I think it was, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal case. And this is something we're going to use. The court found no standing 2-1. So really that means one justice, one person stood between having some kind of a court order and remedy for the green gas emissions and the global warming and all that kind of stuff. One person, and the dissent was very strong, I might add. The dissent was far more compelling than the two other judges who had a shorter opinion. Not typical for the dissent to be longer than the majority opinion, but we had in the majority is Mary H. Murguia and Andrew D. Hurwitz, and then Josephine L. Staton was the person who wrote the dissent, and Josephine L. Staton's dissent was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And she gave us a roadmap in that dissent on how we're going to be able to establish standing. First of all, I have to agree with her. I think they should have given standing to those people. But our case is going to be different because one of the things they did in that case, which was so troubling to the justices, two justices, was they wanted the court to create a plan, a long-term plan to stop global warming. Okay, that's just really hard. I mean, I'm not saying the court hasn't done things like that. In Brown versus Board of Education, the courts decided they would have to devise a plan to desegregate schools. Okay, that is a massive undertaking. So courts do this,
right,
and they can do it if they're trying to protect people's rights. So there's no reason they couldn't do it, but our case is different. We are not asking for a full plan. We're asking to stop this one thing, which is spraying our air with chemicals as part of the geoengineering plan. So I think we're going to get standing in our case. But keep in mind, these cases, standing is one of the hardest issues. Federal court jurisdiction is a whole class in law school. And federal court jurisdiction starts with standing because that's how a lot of people get bounced out of courts. So to get jurisdiction in federal court, keep in mind the federal courts are courts of limited jurisdiction. Their jurisdiction is defined in Article 3. Everything else must be in state court. So standing is a doctrine to keep people kind of out of federal court unless they have particular things are met, injury, right, ripeness or review. It can't be an advisory opinion, you know, even a declaratory judgment in federal court, but not an advisory opinion, so there's all these things going on. And the two judges basically just said that they felt that this was, first of all, it wasn't going to stop global warming. Even if they issued this order, so it's not going to stop it. But if the dissent said, yeah, it might slow it down, that's redress. That's a benefit to the public. So did you have a chance to read that case? It's Giuliani versus United States, for the people who are listening. It's a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal case. Decision was January 17th of 2020. And the plaintiffs did file a motion for a rehearing en banc, which means they're asking for all of the Ninth Circuit justices to come together and listen to it as a huge panel as opposed to three people, because normally you get a three-judge panel in federal court. You have to move for rehearing en banc, and that was denied. And so in reviewing this case on Westlaw, I did not see an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. So I'm not sure what that means.
This is about ceasing carbon dioxide, greenhouse gases, and as you said, they weren't willing to do that. Now, first of all, I do want to say that I think global citizens and Americans have to have a conversation around climate change and understand that we cannot have a serious conversation about climate change until we stop engineering and messing with weather and with our skies. As long as we continue to geoengineer and spray, we're going to have climate change. So you cannot differentiate one from the other until you stop geoengineering, aerosol spraying. We really don't know what's going on with the climate. We just don't. And so that's one of my biggest arguments. And so with that case, basically, as you said, like, we can't make a plan. It's too difficult. You can't really stop it anyway. And what is beautiful about this is, as you said, we can stop this. You can stop spraying. You can stop flying the drones and you can stop flying the planes. You can stop spraying it. So that's what we're working on right now. And it's also very important to understand that there are a lot of nations, Dina, from Canada to Mexico to the UK, the European Union, who would love to join us and tag along once we file, because they have the same issues in their skies, and their jurisdictions aren't big enough. Really, when you look at it, the bulk of it is coming from the United States. It's coming from NATO, United Nations. They're all in on this, but the United States is the head of the snake. And if the United States is not being addressed, the other nations cannot address the issue. So the objective, too, is not for us to play a game of whack-a-mole. I've had people say, how can you possibly stop this? They're going to clobber you. Well, we're not coming in at this on a solo trip here. We're going to bring in other jurisdictions. We're going to be coming also on the ground crews with people doing education, outreach, and so on to get people, really keyed into what's going on. And then, of course, heavy, heavy social media presence as well to really educate people what's going on and wake them up.
And like I told you before, we're dealing with the federal government and international co-conspirators. We're dealing with an enormous cabal. It's international. But the people of these countries, the Americans, European people, people in India, they're all on our side.
Yes.
People do not want to see what the governments are doing. And something has happened where our founding fathers took so much time and effort to, in that hot basement in Philadelphia, to write this constitution, to separate the powers, create checks and balances, and a system of federalism, which is the distinction between federal and state power. That's called federalism. And separation of powers, of course, the three branches, but they worked so hard to do it, and it's all been flipped. The people are supposed to govern. We're supposed to tell them what to do. And they're doing things behind our back, using our taxpayer dollars behind our back, bailing out banks, it is out of control. The only way we can take back this country is through solidarity, but I think it's got to be beyond the United States. I think it has to be international human solidarity, and that's why I just set up my website. And we're looking for $3 donations, $5 donations, anything people can afford, because we are pulling together truly the best scholars in the country, and one of them writes the top common law book in the country, constitutional law, and another one writes an evidence textbook, and it's going to its fifth edition. We have professors who are the experts. And then, of course, my environmental law expert, who is phenomenally talented and knows more than anyone, probably in the country, about environmental law, because that's all she does.
Right.
So we have this great group, but we do need money. And the thing is, I don't think people realize how expensive this is. Just to get through this case, to read it carefully and to read every single aspect, because these are constitutional issues that are not taught in law school.
Right.
The standing issue, yes, but not to this degree. Basic standing, of course. But law school classes are survey classes. You're going to get a few cases here and there. And to read some of the stuff, like the public trust doctrine was not taught. I taught con law. I had my, the items you want to teach that are on the bar exam. It wasn't on there. So we're talking about even a con law scholar like me having to go and read these cases and understand them. So that's lordadvocates.org is now up. It's a skeleton. It's just the donate button and the opening page. We're going to put up the curriculum vitae of the lawyers. We're going to be putting up the mission statement, and we're going to be putting up the various cases we're going to be working on, and also possibly a set of what we're going to call open letters to the public. open letters sent to different people about what they've done wrong or whatever, describing that, and then letting the public have access to those letters as opposed to just letting it sit in someone's drawer in the corporate offices. So that's what we're going to be doing. And if anyone has just a few dollars, it adds up. Remember how Obama won the election, or what they say anyways, he had a lot of $3 donations and a lot of $5 donations. So we need a little bit from everyone to support this cause. We are working our rear ends off. And I can tell you, Lord Advocates is different than other 501c3s. We will not be spending any money on travel and alcohol and drinks and conferences where everyone just parties or whatever. I mean, it is out of control the way the 501c3s have squandered a lot of money. So we're going to be spending ours on only attorney's fees and related court costs.
Right. So we have Lord Advocates, which you're so kind to be our fiscal sponsor. So we have an organization, a 501c3 that's been filed called Gen 7. That's GenSeven, one word, gen7.org. And you've been kind enough to be a fiscal sponsor while we get ourselves established. And the objective is to have Gen 7 be the umbrella for Save Our Skies. So if you go to gen7.org, you'll see Save Our Skies. You can click on there. There's a give, send, go. That money right now is going to you guys to cover the legal costs and the research. And I have to say,
it's tax deductible. What she's saying is it's tax deductible because we're sponsoring this as a 501c3. So any donation is 100% tax deductible. But I want to impress upon the listeners, we are not going to be spending this money on travel or an entourage, a big black issue.
No.
That is not, we are litigators. We are lawyers. We are a policy analyst. This is what should have been done a long time ago.
People have to understand too that the thing with we've been, as I said, COVID centric for the last 3 years, many of us fighting just for our basic rights. And since then, the perpetration is much worse than it was before. Mm-hmm. But as bad as COVID was, you could opt out from the injections.
Yes. Yes.
You could opt out from the masks.
Right.
Nothing on this planet, human or wildlife, that can opt out from this assault. This is actually the most important environmental court case and decision to ever be made, because it's affecting everything.
It's affecting the movement. And let me tell you what I think, just because of what I heard Lyndon B. Johnson say on that commencement speech or whatever it was, all those many decades ago. I think that I believe there is such a thing as global warming. I mean, every single environmental lawyer and law professor I know says it's crazy to say there's not global warming. There clearly is global warming, so I'm going to defer to them because I'm not an expert. So if there is global warming, if it's as dangerous as we say it is, and even the Ninth Circuit recognized that, even the majority, the two-member majority, recognized we're headed basically over a cliff, you know, and they're basically saying, well, we're going 100 miles an hour, we might you know, lessen it to 90 miles an hour, but how's that really going to help? It's like, well, time, I mean, the court, it's so frustrating to me. But what I think may be happening is if global warming is as dangerous as they say it is, and if we're at risk for a scorched earth where we need shelter from the sun, then he who controls the cloud cover controls the safety of the people, right? And he who controls the clouds can control the rain, and there's going to be much needed water, right, around the world. So it's not surprising to me that the United States is the number one offender when it comes to geoengineering and manipulating the weather and whatnot through spraying the skies, because, you know, this is like a lot of countries, there's a lot of nationalism, these ideas that we'll protect ourselves, make sure the United States has all the technology and has it first and has a nuclear bomb first, whatever it is. And this is a time we're going to have to really think through, how do we create an international human solidarity? Because this is not about, well, if you're American, we'll probably win on the geoengineering, race or whatever. But the problem is we're all going to lose, too. Making it worse, right?
Right. And I have to tell people, too, you know, this last winter here in California, which is where I'm located, Northern California, was absolutely horrendous. The amount of snow and the heaviness of the snow, there was nothing natural about it. But I have to tell you, it was so outrageous that it really spurred a lot of mama warriors, I will call them, who saw their trees falling on the property, you know, splitting in half, limbs dropping, just really unusual characteristic of trees and so on. And they've gone out and they've actually collected the water and snow samples, and they've had them analyzed. And so we're seeing extraordinary numbers. I can tell you some of these toxins. We have aluminum, antimony, which I've never actually heard of before, arsenic, barium, cadmium, chromium, cobalt, copper, lead, lithium, nickel, selenium. We have titanium, tungsten, uranium, zinc. This is what we're finding in our rainwater at high levels. Now, it's bad enough for us adults, but when you look at the children with their developing bodies and brains, you're wondering why they're having, you know, ADHD and ADD and autism and so on. Is their bodies are full of this, and the aluminum lodges in the brain. So you can only imagine what's happening to their neural pathways. So this is an assault, and our lives, our longevity, our overall well-being, our mental, emotional, physical state is all at risk. And it's not just us, it's the pollinators. The decline of them are extraordinary. And it's not just the geoengineering. 5G plays a role in that. The LED street lamps play a role in that. The glyphosate plays a role in that. But this is a toxic soup. And our objective is, one by one by one, is to remove the toxins from our existence so we can get ourselves and our nature, our planet, back in harmony once again and balance.
What allergies are. I mean, people are talking about how people who have never had allergies, they're 45, 50 years old, and they're suddenly having horrific allergies every year. Well, what do you think is going to happen to your body when you're breathing in this stuff or you're ingesting this stuff? Your body's probably going to have some kind of autoimmune reaction or immune reaction. And here's what I found really probably the most disturbing. They brought some various claims, public trust doctrine, equal protection claim, which I think is silly. Anytime you have a substantive due process claim, anytime you have a substantive due process claim, if you have a liberty right, that affects everybody, you don't need an equal protection claim. It's similar analysis, but I would always opt for the substantive due process claim, which is basically a liberty interest. Substantive due process just means there are certain things the government cannot do. Procedural due process says you have to have certain types of procedure, notice, hearing, whatever, opportunity to appeal. Those are procedural issues, but substantive due process simply says, government, you can't do that. And it's often, you know, liberty clause based. Sometimes it's property clause based, but it's liberty clause. So here's what the court said. The plaintiff's sole claim is that the government has deprived them of a substantive constitutional right to a climate system capable of sustaining human life, and they seek remedial, declaratory, and injunctive relief. Reasonable jurists can disagree about whether the asserted constitutional right exists. Are you kidding me? Show me the jurist that says that constitutional right doesn't exist to life itself, to breathe air. If there's ever a constitutional right out there, I promise you it's to life itself. You get more procedure if the government wants to take your life in a capital punishment case than any other kind of claim. Life itself is absolutely a fundamental right. So how, we are saying, oh, but you don't have a tangent fundamental right to breathe air? I mean, the fact they would even say that, this is insanity. So it sounds like these judges just didn't know what to do or didn't want to deal with it, or I'm not sure. They say it's beyond their power to order, design, supervise, or implement the plaintiff's requested remedial plan. And I have to say, we are not going to be asking for a remedial plan. We are going to take this precedent and we're going to recognize that despite Brown versus Board of Education and some other cases, we are going to steer away from a remedial plan. We don't need that right now. We want to stop one type of action, that's spraying our skies with all kinds of heavy metals that is causing such a loss of the planetary life. The plants, the trees are falling over. The rain, the snow is filled with chemicals and heavy metals. So that's all we're going to be trying to do in this case. And again, lordadvocates.org is a place to donate, and we are going to be putting up our progress along the way. Another thing the other 501c3s didn't do, they didn't tell you who was going to be litigating their cases. They didn't give you the progress reports along the way. They didn't explain what they were doing or how they were spending their money other than on the IRS 990s, which are not exactly something most people look to. I plan to post everything on my site. Why not? Why not? You have to report it anyway. I don't know why people don't just do this up front.
Can you speak to your litigation? People know that you are a constitutional scholar, that you have been a professor for decades, mm-hmm. But they don't know about your litigation past, the briefs that you've written. Can you speak to that?
Sure. I started out as a litigator back in 1988, because I was a summer associate at a law firm called Urban Cohen and Jessup in Beverly Hills, which is the biggest law firm in Beverly Hills at that time. a very good law firm on Wilshire Boulevard right there on Cannon in Wilshire. And I started out like we all do, doing research memos and discovery and stuff like that. And then I worked my way into working for someone named Rick Love, who's a plaintiff's lawyer in Brentwood. And the trials were really big. And he had like millions of dollars in damages. And so I didn't get to try a case by myself, but I second chaired cases. I certainly did all sorts of, you know, motions for summary judgment, oppositions to motions to dismiss. I did many, many hearings. And then I became a law professor and I was really studying. But the thing about being a law professor is these are the only people who are going to know how to deal with this. I mean, let's put it this way. If you don't hire a law professor, a constitutional scholar for a case like this, you're going to be paying hundreds of thousands of dollars just for lawyers to get up to speed on the constitutional law. It's too much to learn. But when you have a background in constitutional law, and especially when you've taught it, because you learn subjects much better when you teach them than when you just take a class, that's where the benefit comes in from the academy and my 20 years in the academy. And the other thing is that I have personal friends who are the leading experts in these areas of law. That's probably the biggest value of the academy. But then about maybe 10 years ago, I had to start litigating again. Various property disputes. I had someone put a septic, one of Bill Gates's associates, a spinoff of Microsoft, they have a company called Intellectual Ventures in, technically I think it's Bellevue, whereas Microsoft's in Redmond. But in any event, one of their employees was an extra neighbor and did not have a lawful lot for really basically living in. He was apparently bringing water in from the Snoqualmie River illegally. And I remember him warning me, the prior owner, saying, don't ever drink out of the tap water, Dina. Don't ever drink. I'm like, okay, that's weird. And now I know why. And he also put a septic system under my land, illegally, of course, with a King County permit that was illegally issued, which is a constitutional violation. The government doesn't have the power. Hundreds of years of precedent. The government can't give me a permit to go on your land. There's just no, it's a private taking. So I've been litigating, that's like the Section 1983 claim against the government. That's the kind of claims we bring against the government. And I've been doing those kinds of claims now for years on various properties. And we've had, gosh, that Snoqualmie property had two lawsuits on it. Anytime you're in a rural area, people who are not really good people will see that you're not there full time, and they will build something over the property line or put something under your land. And you know, those kind of people usually won't get off unless you sue them. Mm-hmm. Because if they were going to be decent people in the first place and abide by the law, they wouldn't have done it in the first place. So I've been actively litigating now for about 10 years as well. We've won motions for summary judgment, or we've filed motions for summary judgment and the case been settled, things like that. So trials are not that hard, Renette. I mean, you know, I just went through another trial, about six months ago, maybe almost a year ago now, I guess it was. Again, there's not that much to know for a trial. The real heart of practicing law comes in understanding how to apply the facts or how to apply the law to the facts you have. This is what they test in law school. This is what, and the LSAT tests your ability to understand which facts go together, how to draw a logical conclusion. The LSAT also tests cognitive speed and cognitive accuracy, which are critical, in my opinion, for a lawyer. Mm-hmm. The LSAT gets you in the top law school, but if you're top of your class at a top law school, the way you get there is by having very good analytical skills, because they just give you a set of facts in law school, and you have to just tell the professor how you would apply the law, which claims you'd bring, what the issues are, what you'd have to overcome, what evidence you don't have, what evidence is missing. That's why top law school graduates who are top of the class are basically all I deal with in my practice, because these are people who are really geared toward practicing law. They're just, it's a knack for them. It's their, you know, Beethoven or someone playing music. For some people, practicing law comes naturally, like someone else plays music. It's just something that is so natural. My husband's like that. He's just a natural. He just gets it. Mm-hmm. And so, so having not tried a lot of cases on my own is, to me, a very minor part of this. I've been litigating on and off for 33 years, 34 years now, I guess, since 1989. And if you count the summer associate, since 1988. But the trial part is not the hard part. The trial part, you have some technical rules. You have to, you know, lay a foundation, authenticate your documents, all that. You have to, you know, follow some rules, some procedural etiquette, you know, in court. But the hard part is figuring out which claims to bring and how you're going to prove them.
Right, and that's why I really appreciate you, because as you've said before in the past, this is not a You know, this is not a horse race, it's a marathon, and we have to make sure that the claims we make, the charges, you know, are going to have standing in court. Otherwise, we're going to be thrown out, sets a bad precedence, and we can't allow that to happen. So I also wanted to speak to, and thank you, because when I came to you, you were not at all familiar with geoengineering whatsoever, and you're willing to do more of a deep dive as well. And I want to thank you for being willing to do that, because you've gone from not 0 to 60 miles an hour, but 0 to 120 miles an hour, just, you know, reading up on it and reflecting, okay, how does this overlay with the Constitution and our God-given rights? And I just want to thank you for being willing to take on such a Herculean effort. It's gigantic. And I know we're just scratching the surface of it. And you're willing to take a look at it and really understand it. And you have seen, just from what we've given you, you have seen enough criminality. And you've said, how can this continue for so long? How is this allowed to happen? How are they allowed to lethalize our skies? And for whatever reason, we have not had a court case get to the point where it needs to get to bring this to an ultimate end. And I do believe, once again, folks, this is why we're asking is I think people don't fully understand. They think that the court costs and the legal fees begin once you file, and they don't understand that no, it's all the way before then that you're setting it up, doing the research, right, finding what the crimes are, making the claims and the charges, looking at the legal precedents, and making sure that you're as tight as you can be. Otherwise, you're going to get thrown out. So that's where we are right now. We're in the throes of that, and that's where we're saying we've got attorneys, we've got researchers, we have people doing the deep dive, and that's why we're raising the money right now, is because this is not a cheap endeavor, and who we are going up against is the biggest of the big.
And they're always going to file motion to dismiss before. This is what I call the due diligence period. Just like I call every single reference on an applicant to rent my house, all the due diligence should come in before that tenant gets in their house. If you let someone in your house without doing all your due diligence up front, you can have problems, and they can be big problems. So it's worth a ton of time to decide which tenant to allow in your house. Then it goes smoothly. Same with lawsuits. It's exactly the same thing. I already have a draft motion, I'm sorry, opposition to a motion to dismiss in a case that we haven't filed. Right. I already have a draft of the opposition to the motion to dismiss. I know what they're going to say. And the reason I know what they're going to say is I've read all the cases. They're going to lose, by the way. But the reason why I do it this way is because you have to know all about the law before you file. And you also have to anticipate the motions to dismiss, and you have to know what your arguments are going to be. Because if you understand the law that well, your allegations in the complaint will answer those defenses. Because keep in mind, at the motion to dismiss stage, the court must assume every allegation is true. In the complaint, you cannot dismiss a complaint unless all the allegations taken as true do not state a claim. You have to understand the procedural aspects of why and when courts dismiss cases. And they do it wrongfully sometimes, don't get me wrong. But most of the time, if your pleading is sufficient, you will survive that motion to dismiss. Mm-hmm. But federal courts are known for throwing them out. And here's another thing that a lot of people don't realize. Federal courts are under fire, or coming under fire right now, in part by me, saying they are not upholding their job. Their job is to protect our liberty. And this, of course, is going to be a Liberty Clause case, like, and probably public trust doctrine case as well. Like the one.
Can you please give us a definition of Liberty Clause? What is that exactly? Can you tell the viewers?
The Fifth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment has a clause that says that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, that one clause, it's also reiterated in the 14th Amendment, mm-hmm. when the states were now bound, basically, well, not exactly, it's complicated. There were the incorporation cases that applied each of the first eight amendments to the states via the 14th Amendment. But that due process clause in the 14th Amendment has the same meaning as the due process clause in the Fifth Amendment, which says the government can't take things from you without due process of law. Due process means two things. It means procedural due process, and it means substantive due process. Remember, substantive due process means they just can't do it. It's just too much. It's too far. They can't chop off your hand for stealing something. Doesn't matter how many times you've stolen. That's too much. And that would also be cruel and unusual punishment, by the way. But the BMW case, for example, Supreme Court held, you know, you can punish them with punitive damages, these companies who do bad things, but you can't make it a 50% of the net worth type punitive damage award because that's too much. It's substantive due process. But most substantive due process cases are all about the Liberty Clause. And because that was the area of law that I specialize in, one of them, I have about six areas I specialize in 20 years of research, that for me, it's I know the Liberty Clause so well that it's easy for me to bring these facts into the overall Liberty Clause jurisprudence. And I mentioned this in my speech at the COVID litigation conference, as I asked Erwin Chemerinsky years ago, like in 2007, I think it was, and I said, what's the test for the Liberty Clause? Well, I'm trying to establish a Liberty Clause in children not to be hit at school with baseball bats. They shave down baseball bats in Texas. They beat the crap out of these kids. He goes, well, there is no test. I'm like, what do you mean there's no test? I know there's tests. There's always balancing tests. It's the Constitution. And he says, well, there's a lot of different tests, so someone should create an interpretive method synthesizing all these tests into one interpretive method, and I think you should do it. And I said, oh, no, I was in the middle of a law review article, so I set that aside, my quote punishment article, and I created another article called Elements of Liberty, 2008 SMU Law Review, and that is what I did there. I looked at all the incorporation cases, the substantive due process cases, the procedural due process cases, and the bodily integrity cases in the criminal context. This time, the vaccines were unconstitutional from the very beginning. Nothing's been allowed. When they go into your body and they go beneath your skin, as the court in Winston versus Lee said over and over, you can't go beneath the skin to dig out a bullet in that case. The guy wouldn't agree to the bullet being extracted. They wanted it for evidence. The court said no. They forced the guy to vomit in Rochin versus California before that. And the court said, you can't do that. That's too close to the rack and screw. You can't force someone. Because the police came in. They saw him pop the morphine pills. So they knew he'd swallowed them. They went down. They pumped his stomach. They got the pills out. And the court said, you can't do that. You can't go into someone's body. So when these COVID vaccine mandates came out, I was very clear that this is a Liberty Clause violation. I told some of the biggest attorneys in this movement exactly how to win these cases, and they did not do it. And they didn't listen to the expert, and cases that should have been won were not won. It is absolutely so demoralizing for me. I don't know what I would do if I didn't have faith, because I can't comprehend why this has happened the way it has. And it's so 100% clear. And Justice Clarence Thomas, by the way, made mention of this in the CMS mandate case, the healthcare worker case. Remember, that was 5-4 allowing the mandates, whereas the OSHA was 6-3 saying, no, you can't do this. Well, Clarence Thomas wrote a dissent and said, you know, we're not looking at the importance of the vaccine, meaning we're not looking at the efficacy, the need for the vaccine. Why? Because a Liberty Clause claim wasn't brought. That's why. A non-delegation claim. The Liberty issue has not been before the Supreme Court since 1905. In Jacobson versus Massachusetts, on this, you know, idea of invading your body with a toxin that you don't want. In that case, it was smallpox vaccine. Totally different story. Vaccine had been around 100 years. Jacobson didn't come in and show any medical injury from the vaccine. It was being used all over the world, again, over 100 years. It just didn't have the risks that this experimental, COVID shots had. So that's why this is why you want a constitutional law professor involved, and an environmental law professor, and a certified appellate lawyer, and an environmental practitioner if possible, and certainly an evidence and torts person. You want someone who has expertise in causation for injuries, and I have that too. I taught torts for 20 years. I actually taught constitutional law for about 5 years altogether between First Amendment and the survey class, and a class I created called Children Constitution and Law. So torts is actually my greater forte, but I've mostly published in constitutional law. So you need it all. You need all these people to come together, and we have all those. We have the certified appellate lawyer. We have the person who wrote a common law textbook. We have an evidence textbook author, and we have all these people. That's why I feel strongly that if we can get the support, we can do this. I mean, it's now or never. This is not just, again, not just a case, it's a movement. You're listening to Revolution Radio. This is Counter Speech. I'm Dina Sachs with Renette Senna. I'm talking about geoengineering and how we plan to get an injunction to stop it. Please give to Revolution Radio today. Get online at freedomslips.com and make a donation. We are 100% listener sponsored, and we really appreciate your donations, so keep them coming in. So, Renette, what say you to all that?
You and I spoke about this before, and myself and many of us have been always waiting for somebody to go out there and save us. And there's certain iconic figures out there that we think they have this covered. And now here we are many years in, and I look around and I see the pollinators, the populations completely just crash and burn, and the trees are dying, and plants aren't growing like they used to, and plants are burning, and people's health is not good, and we have memory issues, and it just goes on and on and on. And I just want to say that I came to the conclusion quite a few weeks ago, and that's when I reached out to you, that I can't wait for anybody to do this. And though I've never brought on any type of lawsuit ever, I've never needed an attorney ever for anything. So this is a gigantic leap. I'm like, well, if not now, when? And if not me or us, who? And so I just really want to speak to the people out there. I know there's a lot of people out there right now who know what's going on, and they know what's at risk. And I just want to say, I have to talk about, we have to raise the money for this. This is not going to be cheap. This is David versus Goliath. And this is going to be very expensive. As you said, they're going to fight like the Dickens. And so if we can't cover the costs of this to file this and fight this, who's going to do it for us? And so I'm willing to let you all know I'm not getting paid. We're paying individuals. We're paying the researchers. We're paying some of the attorneys and so on. I'm not getting paid. I want people to know that I'm not making money from this, and I never will. I'm dedicating my life to this because I feel like if I don't do this, we don't have that long. So what do we have to lose? I'm going to make this very clear. If I believe these are my last days on this planet, I'm not going to waste my time with something that I don't find extraordinarily important. The most important thing that I can do is make sure that 7 generations from now have a beautiful, bountiful planet. So I'm really appealing to everyone out there. If you know what we're talking about and you know this is an aerial assault, I'm going to ask and implore you, please, go to GiveSendGo, go to my, Renette Senham's foghornexpress.substack.com. You can go there, you can go to Lord Advocates, and you can find essentially that little give button and just even do it $5 every single month and get us through this, because this is huge. It's
Starbucks. And keep in mind, I worked for about a year full time without one penny coming in. And then Naomi Wolf hired me. I got some paid work, but I'm saying, I also am behind the eight ball because of how dedicated I am to this. And I spent 20 years of my life becoming an expert in various areas of law, including the media's influence on your brain. I know what they did. I know how they did it. These are the areas of law by sheer coincidence or by God's plan, whatever you want to call it. This, all these areas I studied. So I see the assault on so many levels coming at us, like the walls are closing in. And we have to do this together. We have to stand in solidarity. Meanwhile, we have people like this person, Cody Harris in Texas, who has reintroduced a bill to abolish basically the tort of public nuisance. Public nuisance is when people are being polluted. He wants to abolish it as long as the government has sanctioned it. Cody Harris, you are completely confused, and I don't know who you are, but I wrote to my legislator also, Ann Johnson, on May 13th and said, would you do something to stop this bill? This is outrageous. To take away the public's right to sue for public nuisance, that's taking the public's right to do anything about pollution, to get injury, damages. I mean, it's insane. And because people aren't paying attention to what's going on in our legislatures and things, so many bills are going through. It's so much is happening so fast, our people can't keep up. So this is why I'm asking people for donations. I'm not asking you to go do all the work I'm doing or to go read all the cases like I have to do. What I am asking is to support us. I want to hire some USC students, law students, some Berkeley law students. Those are my two law school alma maters. I want to hire some help. I can't do it alone. This is too much work. And right now we're a very small show. But I want to mention something. This Judge Stanton, this fabulous Josephine Stanton from the Ninth Circuit, she said something. And I want to just read this. Plaintiffs bring suit to enforce the most basic structural principle embedded in our system of ordered liberty, that the Constitution does not condone the nation's willful destruction. It's so common sense that judges are like, oh, I don't think we have the right ability to oversee the plan. It's like, guys, your job, the job of the judiciary is to protect liberty interests, to protect our liberty from being stolen, from our health being taken from us, from our lives being destroyed by the other branches. And that's exactly when we need the judges the most. I said this in my brief to the Third Circuit about the vaccine mandates in New Jersey. you guys, it's time to wake up. This is your job. Mm-hmm. And if you shared, oh, well, we're going to defer the legislature, you can't. That's, the Constitution's clear on that. This is when you need to step up and protect us. That is your role as an unelected, the only unelected branch, because that way you can't be governed by politics because we want you to do the right thing. And that's why that branch, the unelected branch, is the one that's supposed to protect our liberty interests, even if we're a small and insular minority, even if we're, you know, a tiny marginalized group. That's why they have life tenure, so they can do that and protect us.
Right. And I have a question for you. And I've had people ask this about the geoengineering and trying to protect the American people. And this is a global, what's going on, this is a global scheme that's going on. And I've had people ask me, how do you stop this through the courts when we have military black ops that are conducting programs that, you know, the dark of the night? How can you stop these black op programs that the public is not been made aware of? Does the court have that kind of jurisdiction?
You're saying if the public doesn't know, I'm sorry,
basically there's black budgets in the military. You have the budget that Americans know about, and you have another budget here, it's a black budget, for programs, right? Clandestine programs that Americans aren't aware of. And many believe that the geoengineering that's happening is part of some of those clandestine programs. So the question was, how do the courts stop the clandestine programs?
Well, they investigate, first of all. I mean, the courts, can commission an investigation. They can do all sorts of things. Federal courts are very powerful.
Right.
And they are duty bound to find out what's going on. If they hear that our individual rights are being thwarted like that, and that they're killing people and killing our planet, I think they have an obligation to. Another thing, I was reading this from, again, Josephine Staten, who's such an amazing jurist, and she says the majority basically says it cannot step in the shoes of the political branch that's called political, I'm sorry, political question. If something's a political question, the courts will say we can't answer it. It's for the political branches, meaning the elected branch. But then she says, but the majority appears ready to yield, even if those branches walk the nation over a cliff. Mm. We can't. The judiciary can't do that. Mm. That's when they must step in. Again, just like with the COVID shot mandates, they had to step in because this was unprecedented, experimental stuff. People were losing their jobs, forcing young people. Pilots, you know, people who need their help. We all rely on their help. Hundreds of passengers per flight. And judiciary just, well, to be blunt, the lawyers didn't make compelling arguments. I would almost say the case. It was no lawyer that litigated these cases challenging the vaccine mandates was a constitutional law professor. None of them that I know of ever wrote anything on the Liberty Clause. They certainly hadn't analyzed all the Liberty Clause cases together and shown the similarities in all the cases and what the core values are in the Liberty Clause. And that's okay not to have that expertise, but if you don't, you call an expert. I would never bring a bankruptcy case by myself. I would never bring a lot of cases or even defend a case by myself. If someone said, I want you, Dean, it has to be you, I said, okay, fine, but I'm going to bring an expert co-counsel. I can't do it because you need the expertise. I believe that had a case been brought properly under the Liberty Clause and with the Supreme Court, we will win that. And I'm still looking for date donations for that. I have a fabulous client in the First Circuit over in Massachusetts, and we're looking for funding for that. Problem is, we have the right people, but we don't have the funding. And people who have the funding don't have the right lawyers. And I've said so many times before, we need a marriage between the funding and the talent. I mean, not to sound rude, but the funding and the knowledge, the talent, the really good lawyers just simply must come together. Because if they don't, we can't win this war.
Well,
the world can't win it without money, and all the money in the world can't win it without the talent, without the knowledge, without the expertise. We need that.
Yeah, and that's actually why I reached out to you, because I know attorneys, but I don't know attorneys who could do what needs to be done. And I know this is a gigantic fight, and I know that you know the best in the upper echelon of the legal minds out there and the scholars, and I knew that you could really round up some of the best you know, legal brains that's available to us. And I know it's going to take that. So again, it's a huge learning curve. And I know you're ensconced in you know, periodicals and white papers and peer-reviewed studies and so on. And I'm really grateful for that. And I'm really grateful that you've taken this on so seriously. Thank you.
Yeah, I come to the table with a certain set of skills, but I'm just one person. We need other skills. We need litigators, appellate lawyers, like my husband is walking around back there. We need these other people as well. And the beauty of it, again, is, I mean, we make that one call together, Lynette, you and me, and the expert environmentalist, and she set us on the right path. I think looking at like a trailhead, right? It's all which children are going, this is where the value of my friendships in the academy come in. They say, take this path. So now we still have to go down the path. We still have to do the research. Right. We still have to make our way up that path. But we were put on the right path at the very beginning instead of fumbling around trying to choose a path. That's the beauty of knowing the experts, right, and be able to get that early feedback so we can get on that right path and go down a road that will lead to success. I've seen, I won't even go into it, but what I've seen in the litigation, what I'll call the COVID litigation cases, it's been just, I mean, really the scariest thing I've ever seen. I'm absolutely in shock, especially with the kind of money that's gone through certain organizations' hands. They could have hired the best of the best, and they didn't. So we are starting over. We need funding, so please, people, do pitch in. You can, you know, I'll be posting my work online. You can, you know, look at my briefs if you want to see. I know my Liberty Clause brief that was filed in the Third Circuit not too long ago is on U.S. Freedom Flyers' website. So usfreedomflyers.com. It's .com, might be .org. Sorry, I should know this. But it's U.S. Freedom Flyers, you'll find them. It's Josh Yoder is the president. And, you know, we are dealing with very serious litigators and very serious appellate lawyers. And we're all licensed in the U.S. Supreme Court. So we're Supreme Court litigators as well. I haven't been there, but I can't wait to get there. We're ready.
Well, again, if you want to find more, we have my gensevn.org, and that's GENSEVEN.org. And you just click, you'll see up at the top is a tab that says Save Our Skies. So one pager right now, we have someone building out a beautiful website right now, Jamie Arrigo. And but that's where you can click on. You can see a little quick little trailer video that we've made. You can hit the Give, Send, Go button. And just, you know, I ask people, you know, this case will probably run in the millions, and that's a lot of money, but I have to ask the question, how much is your planet worth? And so we're asking people to go on to Give, Send, Go. You can just give $5 every single month. If you can give us a bigger chunk, fantastic. Nothing too small, nothing too big, but we're fighting the planet, and I feel like no one better time now.
Joseph and Jay Staten, you are a rock star. You are an amazing scholar, and I am absolutely thrilled with your discipline. Thank you.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.